8 o'clock having arrived, I'm going to call the taxes committee to order, and we do have a quorum. So the first order of business, we do have some minutes to approve. Representative Les Lagarde moves approval of the February 13th, 2020 minutes. Any discussion on that? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on those approval of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The February 13th, 2020 amendments are approved. All right. So the first bill on the calendar for today is a Chair David's bill, House File 2090. Chair David's, would you like to move your bill for possible inclusion?
I will move,
Chair David's, he's moving. He moves House File 2090 for possible inclusion into a tax omnibus bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was going to make the motion to move it to the general register.
Well, let's,
you can make that
Chair David, just hold off on that until after we hear the bill. And then
okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'll move House File 2090 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Mr. Chairman, I would move the A2 amendment, which was supposed to just be a couple date changes, but they had to. Maybe I could just go to Ms. Dalton.
Okay, very good. So we've got a Representative Davids moves the A2 amendment. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in addition to updating the effective date to be for 2020, three of the four sections in the bill were amended last year in the 2019 committee, so we had to update the reference to the 2019 supplement and pick up the new language.
Very good. Any questions from members on the A2 amendment?
And Mr. Chairman, I'm just really glad I caught that.
Thank you very much, Representative Davids. Hearing no further discussion, we're going to call for a vote on the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion does prevail. The A2 amendment is adopted. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. House File 2090, as amended, very simply removes the sales tax on purchase of materials for example, fire stations, police stations, public safety issues. This is something that there's just a little bit of history on. When I was driving up in February of 1991 for my first day in the legislature, I used to listen back to public radio back then, I'm not sure why, but they noted that Governor Carlson was going to be cutting all local government aids, or local government aid. So the compromise was that to not cut local government aid, cities, counties, and townships would start paying sales tax on the purchases. That's where that comes from. Over the years, I've been whittling away at exempting ambulances, various things we've exempted over the years so that cities and counties and townships don't have to pay sales tax on some of their purchases. This is another step. This is another step that would say that if you're building a fire hall, police station, or expanding thereof, there would not be sales tax. So for the rest of this biennium, I think you should have a note that it'd be $1.96 million. The next biennium, the cost would be $8.3 million. So that's the bill. I would stand for questions and would really appreciate your support.
Thank you very much, Chair Davids. Any questions from committee members? Members, if you remember last year, we had a number of sales tax exemptions for all sorts of projects. And the ones that survived the conference committee were the ones that dealt with kind of public safety facilities, just what you're doing here. So those were the only ones that kind of the Senate would accept, not that we, you know, refer to the Senate, but So anyway, this would kind of codify that part of things. And all right, is there anyone who would like to testify? Oh, we do have a couple testifiers. Very good. Mr. Carlson, please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. It's nice this year I don't have to worry about which Mr. Carlson is going to testify on a tax bill anymore with Mr. Keith Carlson's retirement. So,
what's your brother doing?
I'm here to testify in support of
Mr. Carlson. We did add a Representative Carlson to the committee, though, to replace the missing Keith Carlson. Yes. Representative Carlson.
We're still checking to see if we're related. It's a possibility.
Very good. Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 2090. You know that this has been an issue that the League has been working on for several years, and we really appreciate Representative Davids taking the time to introduce this bill that would exempt those public safety facilities, or really allow a refund on the material purchases for those public safety facilities. Very briefly, the process that cities and counties must follow right now in order to receive a sales tax exemption on their facility is rather challenging for our cities, and many of them do not choose to try to take advantage of the fact that they are exempt. So right now, if we do this without this change in law, we have to basically separately bid labor from materials. We have to also appoint the contractor to be a purchasing agent on behalf of the city. And then finally, we have to assume material defect responsibility for the materials used in that project. And as a result, many cities, counties, and even school districts, when they construct their facilities, choose to not take the risk and just basically pay the sales tax. What this bill would do is still require that the contractor purchase, when he or she purchases materials, would continue to pay the sales tax, but upon completion of the project, the city or county could file for a refund of the sales taxes paid on those construction materials. We've worked with the Department of Revenue to make sure that this was administratively doable for them, and I don't think they will necessarily support the bill, but they do know this process. We have used it quite extensively in Minnesota Statute 297A.71. So with that, Mr. Chair, we do support this piece of legislation and encourage your support for the bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to Representative Davids, appreciate you carrying this bill. And to the testifier, is this kind of the last fix that needs to happen in this particular area, or is there other areas in which we could work on this?
Mr. Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's a good question, because you have a bill that would extend this to all projects, and we appreciate you carrying that bill as well. So if it were a street project or any other public facility, a public works garage, that would actually, your broader bill would encompass this bill, but go beyond and cover all local projects and allow a refund.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Just for the record, also, Representative Swazinski, your bill was heard this year, so it is certainly in play again on the table. So,
and Mr. Chairman, I would
Representative Davids.
I could, that the Swazinski legislation is a very fine piece of legislation. Fine.
Very good. Any other questions for Mr. Carlson? If not, thank you very much. And Mr. Mossman? All right. Any other testifiers that would like to testify on House File 2090? Any other members? So, members, I don't think you've got the revenue estimate in your packets. Mr. Mossman, go ahead. Anyway, while he comes forward, as Chair Davids had mentioned, for 2021, this biennium, both those, it's about $1.9 million, and then into the next biennium would be a total of about $8.2 million. Mr. Mossman, please state your name.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Davids, Matt Mossman with Minnesota Inter-County Association. I know that my colleague from the League explained the bill as the author did. I just want to say a few words here in support of 2090. Certainly police, fire, public safety facilities are prime examples of the public policy and public infrastructure projects that local governments do on a daily basis. And local decision makers, understandably, I think, are reluctant in some ways to take these projects, the liability of the construction materials on. So this is a really, I think, important step towards streamlining the sales tax exemption for construction materials. And we support this bill, and we support broadening it, if we can, as we move forward to all local government projects.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the testifier? Not? Thank you very much. Would anyone else care to testify on House File 2090? Any other comments from members? If not, Chair Davids, closing comments.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would simply move that House File 2090 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Representative Davids renews his motion to lay over House File 2090 for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
So, Representative Westergaard.
All right, the bill we have before us for consideration is House File 3245. Chair Marquard, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
I will move House File 3245 for possible inclusion, and members also have an A2 amendment that I'd like to move at this time.
Okay.
So move House File, amendment, A2 amendment. And I'm going to explain this a little bit more, but it deals with casualty loss in federally declared disaster areas. So we could put this on, and as I explain the bill, I'll just kind of incorporate that, if that would be fine with members.
Okay. Chair Marquard offers author's amendment, House File 3245, labeled A2. Does everyone have the amendment before them?
Yes, sir.
Chair Marquard, can you explain your amendment?
Well, if I could explain the bill at this point.
Bill.
As amended. So, members, this is for kind of veterans of the tax committee. This is nothing new. This is usually.
Chair.
I'm sorry.
Can we please adopt the amendment?
No. Please do.
He told me. Let's start with honesty today. Okay. Any discussion? Hearing none. Chair Marquard. All's in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank God we got that over with.
Mr. All right. Chair, that was kind of shaky.
Yeah. Motion prevails. All right. Nothing more difficult today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So, as I mentioned, the veterans of the tax committee, this is something that occurs from time to time. Now, usually the federal government, between us being in session, makes minor changes. Now, last year, there was major changes because it was the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and a couple other smaller ones that needed conformity. And just to explain why we kind of need to do this is if you you should have received a sheet of paper here that's got the United States in, I think they're hexagons, but it talks about either a static conformity or a rolling conformity. And some states would be rolling conformity, which means if the federal government makes a change, the state automatically makes the changes. Minnesota, we are a static conformity state, which means we conform up to a specific date. So, for example, last year's tax bill, we conformed up to all the federal changes. And we didn't conform to everything, but it was conformed up to December 31st of 2018. And what this bill would do is set the static date for December 31st, 2019. And so that's why we need so many of these things that were done in what was called the Further Consolidated Appropriation Act of 2020, which was enacted in December of 2019, has some items. Many of them are what are called extenders, which means the federal government is only extending them basically through tax year 2020, which means after that we'll come back in some future time and have to do this again. There are some other ones that are permanent, but a lot of them are just extenders. Now, some may say, well, why not, when we have a small bill like this, just kind of do it right now, early on in the session and so forth? And that's been done in the past, but when it's been done in the past, it's usually been done during the budget year when we come back in early January, and filing has not started yet. Filing started this year, January 27th. So if we were to do something now, what the Department of Revenue would have to do is kind of stop things, redo the forms. Meanwhile, the federal government and federal filing will all stay the same. Well, we're kind of somewhat of in an interruption here. So that would probably cause some real confusion. So these are things that the Department of Revenue, because it's not influencing or impacting a huge amount, can come back and adjust and so forth. So anyway, what does it do? There's about three main areas there's kind of some individual portions. Then the second part is really extension of business depreciation and expensing. And then the third area deals with tax items in federally declared disaster areas, that where an area was federally declared in Minnesota. And many times those are dealing with flooding, tornado, or kind of in the terminology, straight line, that a number of counties might have gotten that. So the first part deals with it deals with something called qualified principal residence indebtedness. Basically, when a creditor forgives all or part of a loan, the borrower is usually hit with some pretty big tax implications. Whatever the forgiveness was will show up as taxable income. So in the case of a mortgage where the taxpayer has maybe foreclosed and the lender has forgiven part of the mortgage, or maybe there was a short sale where you had to sell the house for less than what you had on the mortgage, that difference would normally in many cases count as an income. What this does, it excludes that, so it would not be considered as an income. So this is actually, if you look at the revenue estimate, is actually the largest. I think it's $7.2 million just on this part. So it doesn't necessarily hit a lot of people, but when it does hit people, it's pretty significant. Another part of this deals with the Section 529 college savings plans, in that this is new. The federal government is allowing some extra allowances on distributions that will still remain tax-free.
Yep.
And that deals with expenses relating to kind of qualified apprenticeship programs. And then also they're allowing certain loan payments, not only by the person who has the loan, but also their siblings. So it kind of expands that. So if Minnesota didn't conform to this, if on the federal level you did have some stuff on apprenticeship program, you wouldn't be able to take it on the state side. So. And this is something that I think was put in 2017, I believe, was the section for the 529. I think Chair Davids, that was 2017. Yes. So that's kind of the individual part. Then there's a number of provisions that deal primarily with kind of staying on the same depreciation schedule and expensing schedule. So it's going to simplify. And one of the reasons, the major reason we're doing this, is to simplify things for taxpayers, because if we don't conform on the Minnesota side, you come back and it gets complicated. The third area deals with these federally declared disaster areas. And one has to do with casualty property losses. So if you are in a disaster declared area and you suffer a loss of property that's not covered by insurance, you would be able to deduct that difference that you have. Also, the other major part of this is that typically on contributions, charitable contributions, it's limited to 60% of your adjusted gross income. But if you contribute charity-wise to a disaster area, that limit is off. So you can go above that 60%. So those are the main things. If it gets any more detailed than that, I'm going to be asking Mr. Williams to assist, but those are primarily the major areas of what we're doing here. And so I think the total cost is, in this biennium, $28.2 million, and then there's actually some dollars recaptured into the next biennium. So that would conform to the Further Consolidation Appropriation Act of 2020.
Questions from members? I see that we have Representative Sawinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this would be a question probably for Mr. Williams. But so in that 60%, so in a disaster area, you're allowed to donate up to 60% of your gross income, except if it's in, does it have to be associated with the disaster when you make the donation? Or let's say you're just, it happened to be in a in one of those areas, you can just donate to any group you want, like PETA or something like that, or does it have to be related to the disaster?
Mr. Williams.
Chair and Representative Swadzinski, current law is that you can make charitable contributions up to 60% of AGI. The federal act provides that if you make a donation to a qualified relief organization working in a declared disaster area, then you're allowed a charitable contribution up to 100% of AGI.
Chair David.
Thank you, Chair Lisselgard. I'm in Section 2, and this is probably for staff, but I'm reading in your summary, special rules permitting early retirement account withdrawals, including allowed a qualified disaster distribution from retirement account up to $100,000. What's the definition of retirement account? Is it IRAs, 401ks, 403b, SEP, simples, KEOs? What are we talking about? And does that waive the 59.5 rule?
Mr. Williams.
Chair, Representative Davids. So I think it covers a broad spectrum of different retirement accounts that you mentioned. I think that it's, but I have to get back to you to get you just to confirm that it's the whole list that you mentioned. But that provision in Section 2 there is describing individuals that are affected by a natural disaster. Right. Those individuals can take a distribution from a retirement account sort of to cover perhaps the costs of being affected by that disaster. And then there's special rules that would allow them to sort of recontribute amounts to their retirement accounts in the following 3 years. And those would be treated as rollover contributions. You mentioned this issue of required minimum distributions. Is that the question that you asked?
No, I'm not worried about the top end, because at that point you can take however you want. But what I'm wondering about is, does it break the 59.5 rule? So could I, some person at age 50 that got 200 grand in their retirement account, could they take out for a disaster and not have the 10% federal IRS penalty?
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, yes, it waives that federal IRS 10% penalty, but that doesn't flow through to Minnesota taxes, so that doesn't necessarily matter for the purposes of this bill for Minnesota tax purposes, because that federal penalty doesn't flow through to Minnesota.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Okay, we do have Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Chair Marquardt, you mentioned a loss that wouldn't be in a disaster area that wouldn't be covered by an insurance claim. Can you give me an example? Obviously, we've got some of our areas that have been declared disasters now recently. I'm just curious to know what it might, or maybe staff would have.
I mean, I'm thinking it could be on a tornado or a flood where insurance for some reason doesn't cover all of it, but I would.
Mr. Williams?
Chair and Representative Fabian, yes, I think that it's also possible that someone's home may not have homeowner's insurance, and so in that case, if there's a loss to that person due to the disaster in one of these qualified or declared disaster areas, then they would be allowed to take a deduction for the amount that's not covered by insurance.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, for example, in the flood of 2002 in Roseau, the plug that I had in my sewer in the basement blew, and I had $5,000 of sewer backup insurance, which was the cap. I believe that's the most you could have. And then we wound up with about, well, 8 times that of damage in the house. So would that be something that would be not covered by insurance, or would it be covered by insurance but there was a cap on it and you wouldn't be able to do the other $35,000?
Mr. Williams.
Chair and members, I'd have to look sort of at the specific rules in the Internal Revenue Code for casualty losses and sort of how they interact with insurance. My understanding is that you can't claim the deduction for anything covered by insurance, and then there's also a de minimis exception of $100, so you sort of ignore the first $100, and then you can only take the deduction for amounts in excess of 10% of adjusted gross income. So I think that you would probably have to hit a few of those other thresholds for this to kick in, and I'm not certain about the case of someone's, I guess, a flood in someone's basement, how that would be affected.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you. Well, don't feel too bad for me, because I did have $250 insurance on my house for frozen food that got thawed out when the electricity was shut off, so we're okay.
Chair Markford. Chair,
and I'm sure that most of that was frozen fish, I bet, probably. So I forgot to mention that this bill deals with disasters from January 1st, 2018 to February 18th, 2020. So it would not go back to, for example, 2002.
Chair Davids.
Thank you, Chair Lisle-Gard. On back to Section 2. You can get up to $100,000. What determines the up to part? And let's say you do the full $100,000, that's still taxable income, state and federal.
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, I believe so, yes. And I can maybe follow up after committee with more details about how these early retirement provisions work. Oh, that'd be helpful.
We'll talk offline. Thank you, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Mr. Williams, too. I always get complaints from the CPAs down in my area when we are late in doing any changes to the tax law. And I know that in your overview, most of these can be done administratively by the department. Give me examples of some of the things that will require an amended filing.
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair, I'm not certain of exactly which provisions would require an amended filing. Maybe the department could speak to that more specifically.
The department will be coming up, right. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I'll ask then.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, we do have a testifier. Mr. Egger, could you come up, identify yourself for a record, and proceed?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Egger. I'm Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. And we have over 20,000 real estate professionals as our membership statewide. I want to thank Representative Marquardt for bringing this bill forward. I've testified on this bill, I think, every year for the last 8 or 9 years that I've been in this position. And I'm going to keep my testimony really brief because Chair Marquardt did a great job of explaining the provision I was going to highlight, which is the mortgage debt forgiveness provision. That is an item that is critically important, and he did a really good job of highlighting another point I was going to make, which is although the number of people that affects right now, because the market has bounced back significantly from where it was back in 2007 through 2012, the people it does affect, it affects in a very harsh way. And so this is a really important provision to keep moving and to enact at the state level to conform with the changes at the federal level. And just the last item that I'll mention is we're still hopeful that at some point this will stop being an extender at the federal level and will become a permanent feature of the federal tax code. It just does not make sense to us anyway that we would tax income that somebody doesn't realize at probably one of the toughest points in their life when they are probably in the middle of a foreclosure. They had to sell a house for less than it's worth because they can't make the payments. So hopefully at some point we won't have to continue to extend this one, then it'll become a permanent feature of the federal and then subsequently the state tax code. So appreciate your support on this bill, and thank you again, Chair Marquardt, for bringing it forward.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Egger? Hearing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other testifiers that would like to come before the committee? Seeing or hearing none, Chair Marquardt, any closing comments on your bill?
I do not. Just thank you. I would move to lay over House File 3245 as amended for possible inclusion into tax omnibus bill.
Okay. Chair Marquardt renews his motion that House File 3245 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill and that the bill be laid over.
Thank you very much, members.
Went a lot smoother there, didn't it?
And what?
Thank you,
Actually, Mr. Vice Chair, it wasn't that you were shaky. It was the vote on that amendment was shaky. I thought it just wasn't very loud, and so a little worried about that. All right. So next we have the Department of Revenue here. We have we have Robert Doty and Cynthia Rowley here from the Department of Revenue. And so they're going to talk about not only the federal update that we are doing today in conformity, if there's questions on that, but also the administration of the tax bill and how filing is going and so forth. So giving us an update on what is happening at the department at this point. So I don't know who wants to start, but welcome. Thank you for being here. And just please introduce yourselves and proceed with your comments.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Robert Doty, and I am the Assistant Commissioner of Tax Policy and Public Engagement for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I'd like to start by thanking you for this opportunity to come before you this morning. I'm going to start our presentation, and then I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, but I'm going to start by giving you an overview of the department. The Minnesota Department of Revenue provides services to a diverse set of customers, including individuals, businesses, and counties. We strive to meet our customers' needs through efficient and effective tax administration, providing quality customer service to Minnesota taxpayers, and a commitment to continuous improvement. We help our customers meet their obligations under the Minnesota Tax Code. As many of you know, all right, we'll get this coordinated here. As many of you know, our mission at the department is working together to fund Minnesota's future. Now, we believe that together is the most important word in our mission. We know we cannot do our work without the help of our many partners, including tax preparers, software providers, CPAs, tax attorneys, and other tax professionals. We value their perspectives as we find ways to better serve Minnesota's taxpayers. We are grateful for opportunities like today where we can share with you what we've been working on since the last legislative session. The individual income tax filing season is what most Minnesotans think of when they think of the Minnesota Department of Revenue. But individual income tax are just one of over 30 different tax types that the department is responsible for administering. We work year-round with our customers to help them understand and meet their obligations under the tax laws. We work to make their interactions with the department as efficient as possible. We provide services to a variety of customers, including, for example, individuals, businesses, and counties. Each year, we serve about 2.9 million individual income tax filers, from first-time filers trying to figure out how to file and pay, to people who use tax preparers and accountants to file. Some of these people will receive a refund, and others will make a payment. We serve veterans, homeowners, renters, members of the military, seniors, people new to Minnesota, and many, many more. We serve all 87 Minnesota counties and the 800 licensed property tax assessors, and we process over 800,000 property tax refunds per year, as well as make state aid payments to counties, cities, towns, and to special taxing districts through 31 different state programs. Our customers include tax preparers and professionals who work with their customers, who are individuals and businesses, to file and pay their taxes. We serve all types of businesses, from Fortune 100 companies to startups in garages. Over 160,000 businesses collect, file, and pay sales tax each and every month. There are 415,000 businesses in e-services, which is our online file and pay system. Most of these businesses are located in Minnesota. Others are doing business here, but are located across the country and around the world. Each of our customers has a unique circumstance, and we have a responsibility to help them all meet their obligations under Minnesota's tax law. The Minnesota Department of Revenue and the Internal Revenue Service provide opportunities for Minnesotans to file their tax returns for free and to receive free tax preparation assistance. Over 60% of Minnesotans may qualify to file their state tax return for free. Unfortunately, however, over 780,000 qualifying Minnesotans didn't take advantage of that benefit last year. Eligibility requirements differ depending on the free product a taxpayer chooses. There are free filing products available to active military service members, taxpayers qualifying for certain credits, such as the Earned Income Tax Credit, or even if your AGI is less than $69,000. Minnesotans can see a list of free software and the eligibility requirements on our website by searching free file. We strongly encourage Minnesotans to use the department site for information on free file in order to find the most accurate information on free products for federal and state returns. For those looking for free tax preparation services, there are over 200 sites open across the state that are staffed with IRS-certified volunteers to help Minnesotans file their taxes. You can find locations and an interactive map of locations on our website, again, by searching free file. Many employees at the department volunteer their time in the evenings and weekends to help folks get their taxes prepared and filed. Last year, the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, or VITA, program prepared more than 71,000 federal tax returns, more than 75,000 Minnesota state tax returns, and almost 57,000 property tax refund returns for Minnesota taxpayers. All of those returns provided more than $133 million in federal, state income, and property tax refunds. VITA, AARP sites, and tax software providers are important partners in providing free access and working to ensure a smooth filing system for Minnesota taxpayers. The Department of Revenue sponsors 7 VITA sites last year. These sites prepared over 1,000 federal tax returns, over 1,000 state tax returns, and over 700 property tax refunds, for a total of approximately 2,800 returns filed. All those returns provided more than $2.8 million in federal, state income, and property tax refunds. The department's VITA grant programs funds 35 sites in fiscal year 2020. And we are appreciative for the $200,000 increase in our VITA grant dollars that we received last session. The funding allowed us to provide grants in more sites this year with a focus on growing sites in greater Minnesota and expanding services in Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, as well as North Minneapolis. Despite this success, the need for additional sites and services continues to grow. VITA grant requests were double the amount that was actually available for funding. And so with that, I will turn it over to my colleague, Cindy Rowley.
Ms. Rowley?
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Cynthia Rowley, Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Revenue. I have the pleasure of working with the Income Tax and Withholding Area, the Property Tax Area, Special Taxes, and Tax Operations. Thank you for having us here today. I'd like to take a few minutes this morning to update you on some items of interest at the Department regarding the 2019 filing season, the 2020 filing season, and our progress on making adjustments for 2017 and 2018 returns as a result of last year's bill. So So last year, the Minnesota tax bill included many big changes to our state tax code, including conformity and a shift to using adjusted gross income, or AGI, on the individual income tax return. The department worked over the summer through our annual changes process to update forms and systems to reflect those changes. We worked with tax preparers and software vendors to have the 2019 tax return ready in time for filing season. And the 2019 tax bill also included retroactive changes to tax years 2017 and 2018. So let's talk about those first. So the tax bill in 2019 and its impact on tax returns for tax years 2017 and 2018. So we have been hard at work adjusting the 2017 and 2018 filed returns that were impacted by the bill. And there are two distinct populations of returns, and the easiest way to differentiate these populations is to think about who paid the tax. If a business paid the tax, it will be corrected by the corporate tax area on the business tax return. And if an individual paid the tax, it's corrected by your individual income tax area. So let's talk about the business tax returns first. The business tax area, which for purposes of this presentation includes C-corps, S-corps, and partnerships that pay composite tax, and fiduciaries that retain all or a part of their income. So originally, the department identified about 12,500 returns that needed to be corrected on the business side. But that number increased substantially to over 22,500 as more returns were filed using outdated versions of paper forms between the enactment and making the correction. So our plan for these returns was corrected by spring of 2020. And I'm happy to say that over 98% of the identified returns have been reviewed by our staff and some action has been taken. Now, on the individual income tax side, we really have two separate groups of taxpayers. There are taxpayers without business income and taxpayers with business income. The department has almost completed adjusting filed returns with retroactive changes that impacted 2017. And we had originally identified a little over 102,000 returns that might need adjustment. And about three quarters of those initially identified were actually adjusted, so about 77,000. Depending on the complexity of the adjustment, about 70% of these returns were systematically adjusted by the department, and the rest required additional information from the taxpayer. We'll begin reviewing 2018 individual returns that are impacted by the tax bill in the next few months. And our plan is that we will have these adjustments completed by the end of summer 2020. So now let's talk about the 2020 filing season. So as Chair Marquardt mentioned, in December, Congress passed the Taxpayer Certainty and Disaster Tax Relief Act of 2019, and that act affected 2017 returns, 2018 returns, and 2019 returns. So now we have another thing that's affecting 17 and 18. So as soon as it was signed into law, the department began analyzing its impact on Minnesotans. And as you know, Minnesota law has not changed. And so the department responded quickly to the federal changes. We developed nonconformity forms and worked with tax preparers and software vendors to update our impacted forms, instructions, and electronic filing capabilities for 2019. And by January 13th of 2020, we had published updated 2019 forms reflecting the changes made at the federal level in December of 2019. And that allowed us to open as planned with the IRS for the 2020 filing season at this, in January. The nonconformity forms that we were able to put in place during that time really helped the Department of Revenue respond if Minnesota adopts some or all of the provisions in PL 11694, so that December bill. Now let's talk about that bill and its impact for 2017 and 2018. So that tax extender law included provisions that are effective retroactively to past tax years. We're currently updating 2017 and 2018 forms to reflect Minnesota's nonconformity with these changes. Updated versions of these forms will be released on February 27th. Prior to the enactment of the latest federal tax bill, we instructed taxpayers not to amend their 2017 and 18 returns. This is based on the bill passed at the Minnesota legislature last year. And we didn't want amends because we had enough information to know who was impacted and adjust or reach out. However, if a taxpayer updates their 2017 or 2018 federal return in order to take advantage of the provisions in the Tax Certainty and Disaster Tax Relief Act of 19, so the bill that was just passed in December, Minnesota law will require a tax filer to amend their Minnesota return at the same time they amend their federal return. And again, this is required under current Minnesota law for any amended return filed. So let's talk a little bit about the current tax year filing, so the impact and where we're at for 2019 returns filed in 2020. So the tax season opened on January 27th, and we've already received over 630,000 returns. This number represents about 21% of what we expect to receive for the year for individual income tax. This year, we are encouraging all Minnesotans to electronically file their tax return. Filing electronically and choosing direct deposit is the most convenient way for taxpayers to get their refund. And last year, over 90% of taxpayers filed their taxes electronically. And over 99% of the returns we've received so far this year have been filed electronically. Of the returns that have been filed this year, about 67% have already been processed. So let's talk a little bit about looking ahead. As I mentioned, the department updated our 2019 forms and systems to respond to the federal changes included in the Federal Taxpayer Certainty and Disaster Tax Relief Act of 19, that December bill. This update allows filers to go ahead and file their return this season. The federal law included changes that impacted tax years 2017, 2018, and 2019. And so the bill extended a wide range of individual and corporate provisions that expired in prior years. It also included tax changes to retirement plans and deductions related to disaster relief. A few of the more common benefits that were extended include the deduction of tuition and fees for post-secondary education, private mortgage insurance, and the exclusion of foreclosure of a principal residence. And Minnesota, as you know, has not adopted these changes. So we encourage the legislature to wait until after the April filing deadline if you are considering conformity with some or all of these federal extenders. Waiting to conform until after the deadline ensures we serve all Minnesota taxpayers as effectively as possible. Because the Minnesota Department of Revenue implemented the 2019 nonconformity schedule before tax season opened, we can respond if the legislature conforms retroactively, many times without requiring the taxpayer to amend or to supply additional information. So I thank you all for your time, and we'll stand for questions.
Ms. Raleigh, thank you so much. Chair Davids.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. A couple things. As Chair Marquardt said in his presentation of 3245 as amended, we generally like to just get this done, but as he said and you're saying, just wait on this one. Okay. That makes sense. Now, you're talking about the Disaster Act. How does the SECURE Act affect you? That's the act having to do with security plans and is about provisions adoption 529 to extend the RMDs to from 75 to 72, getting rid of inheritance, not getting rid of them, but shortening the timeline to 10 years instead of a lifetime. How are you taking that into account?
Ms. Rowley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, I'm going to have to defer that question to a technical expert on the team if we have one here. Anybody here that can answer? We'll have to take that away. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll follow up with a question I asked earlier when we heard our distinguished chair's bill, House File 3245. We are now, that bill would recommend additional variations and changes to filings, and I know that in your testimony, Ms. Rowling, that you talked about, a lot of those can be done by administratively. So could you give me examples of those items that will require amended filings, and will the filers, taxpayers, be notified that they need to amend versus that, because most people don't stay on top of all these changes?
Ms. Rowley.
Mr. Chair, representatives, yes, for 2019, because we were able to get the forms updated in time, we should be able to identify the bulk of taxpayers that are impacted and either automatically make an adjustment for them or at least contact them. People that will have to amend would include those who file an amended return federally to take advantage for 17 and 18. They would also have to amend their Minnesota 17 and 18 for a couple of reasons. First of all, we didn't have the forms in play in 17 and 18 to identify these situations. And secondly, Minnesota law requires that if you amend your federal return, that you also amend your Minnesota return.
Representative Petersburg.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make clear that I understand. So if you don't amend your federal forms, it looks like almost everything else will be able to be adjusted by the department. Is that correct?
Ms. Rowley.
Mr. Chair, members, that's correct for 2019. Yes.
Any other questions from members? Mr. Doty, Ms. Rowley, thank you so much for your presentation. I know last couple of years, we've thrown a lot at the department with, well, just that Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and just, you know, all the retroactivity. And now, you know, I'm sure it's not easy trying to put all that together. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
It is, definitely. That's why Washington changes the tax so quickly. Well, we got the keep theirs employed and they keep ours employed.
All right, so members, that really concludes today. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about some results and accountability. MMB is going to be here to talk about the results program, and the auditor's office is going to be here talking about the local performance measurement program. And so we'll be talking about results and so forth. Then, is that Thursday? That comes the next Tuesday then. We're hearing a series of bills.
No.
Next Tuesday, we are hearing the tax expenditure budget. And then next Wednesday, there is no meeting because of a break for caucus. And then we hear bills that next Thursday, I think. So, Chair Davids.
Mr. Chair, we will hear whatever you want to hear.
Very good. Give you a little synopsis of the next week. But next Wednesday, no meeting. So, all right. Thank you, members. We are adjourned.